Well, hello and welcome again to our series entitled Jesus, First, Last, and Best. This is part 6 and our final in the series. We're comparing the words and lives of Jesus Christ and Muhammad. This message and all the other messages in this series are available as one 41-page PDF that covers all 40 sections of the report. So I encourage you, if you want a written copy of this, to go right here to part 1 of the audio where it's accessible. It's not accessible on every audio. Number 29 is the section we'll begin with. It's called The Judge, Jesus and Muhammad as Judge. Often people would come to Muhammad asking that their problems be solved by him. And often he was glad to do so. Every dispute that was settled could only raise his star a little higher in the estimation of his growing following. Although Moses entered into this behavior in the wilderness with Israel, Jesus never did. "Who made me a judge over you?" Jesus would say to people. He said it to a man who wanted the Lord of heaven to solve his family's inheritance dispute. But he went on to give the man the best help he could receive in this situation, which was a warning against greed. Jesus was the master teacher, and he gave his people principles by which, with careful thought, meditation on the truth, they could solve their own problems. Muhammad created a dependence on himself that would spell loyalty down the road. I do not doubt that he was sincere at times in helping people, but it did produce that human loyalty. Jesus would not go that direction. Number 30, anger. Muhammad seems to have lived a life of anger, generated in part by a fragmented family life, but fed by a growing rejection of his religion and his very person, people rejecting him. Perhaps one of his finest moments of anger, and anger can bring good moments, was his appearance in the holy place in Mecca when he returned to take over the city. Except for certain icons of the life of Jesus, every statue and every picture in that place was destroyed, as Muhammad declared, "There is only one God." Jesus had a similar moment in the temple at Jerusalem. Here, the enemy was not all the world's religions. It was the activities of those calling themselves the people of God right inside Judaism. People making a profit on the commandments, on the rituals, the prescribed sacrifices of Moses. So Muhammad attempts to rid the world of false religion, but Jesus tried to cleanse his own people of falseness. It's an important distinction, I think. The current religious situation has not changed. Islam self-righteously goes from nation to nation proclaiming that Allah and Muhammad need accepted. Jesus persists in visiting each heart and each church that will allow him in, preparing his people for a new world that he soon will establish. So Jesus is not into world revolution, not into a name tag, not into even a series of prayers. He's into changing hearts one at a time. It's not a political thing. It's a very deeply personal and spiritual thing that Jesus does, the real Jesus. Number 31, the reward. "I am your reward," said Muhammad. He said it to the Medina Muslims. Now that group of Muslims helped him for many years, and they finally helped him to go back to Mecca in triumph. They had been his support all that time, and they wanted something out of it. He had to say, "I am your reward," as consolation to some suddenly very resentful men who had given their lifeblood for his cause and then watched him give away rewards to his Meccan family instead. But he was the reward for all men of all time. He, the prophet, was enough for everyone. That's what he said. Well, only one person can say that he is everyone's reward. It is God himself. God himself said it to Abraham. Don't be afraid, Abram. I am your shield. I am your exceedingly great reward. The Son was in the Father when these words were spoken. They are one forever. So here we have a choice to make. Is Muhammad truly the reward for all of Islam's labors? If that's true, it's tragically true. And is Jesus our reward, we who know him personally? If that is true, it's our eternal delight. Number 32 is the one true religion. What did these men say about that? The Quran is at times confusing. Because of what's called the law of abrogation, I explained it in more detail in our series on the Quran. Muhammad introduced this into the Quran midstream. That law states that Allah is permitted to change certain teachings as time goes by and as necessity demands. It's important to know in reading the Quran which teachings were given first and which were given later. The book's order has nothing to do with chronology, rather with the size of each chapter, the largest chapters being first, and gradually they dwindle in size until the last surahs or chapters are just a few words long. Muhammad spends a lot of time condemning those who condemn Quran and Islam. The theme of Islam's purity and the corruption of other religion fairly shouts at the reader throughout. But there are other lines of thought too. Which one is true? Is it this one in 548 of the Quran? For each we have appointed a law and a path. And if God had wished, he could have made you one people. So vie with one another in good works. Unto God you will all be brought back, and he will then inform you of those things wherein you differed. Wow. Pretty positive message there. Join whatever religion you like. Just keep those good works coming. You'll be all right. Now, if that's the message of Muhammad, it's in contradistinction with the message of Jesus, who clearly proclaimed, I am the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. Jesus leaves no one hanging in suspense here. It's Jesus' way or the highway to hell. This is not a competition for the niceness award. This is life and death. John said, he that has the Son has life. He that doesn't have the Son of God does not have life. Period. Discussion closed. Muhammad could never say that about himself. A quick section on curses here. Muhammad cursed those who came against him. Lings relates the story of such a man and his subsequent death. When Jesus was about blessing, he cursed a fig tree, but not men. He came to bring life and blessing, not cursing and death. And 34, who is this Jesus? Both men had an opinion about that for sure. Muhammad and Jesus had two different ideas as to who Jesus is. Throughout Quran, Jesus is called a created being, equal to all the prophets, except in the area of his virgin birth. His mother is actually honored more in the Quran than he is. Perhaps this is borrowed in part from Romanism, as so much of Islam seems to be. Jesus said he was one with the Father, pre-existent with the Father, in fact. He said that he had the power on earth to forgive sins, a power that only God has. He said he and the Father would come personally to those who love and obey him. So his self-concept was totally different than Muhammad's concept of him, Jesus. And then 35, end-time events. Muhammad claims that a Mahdi, an Islamic caliph-like messiah, will one day come to earth. He'll reign 7 years. Antichrist will pick up where he leaves off. And then Jesus will descend to lead us all in an Islamic prayer. Well, Jesus, and through Jesus' spirit, John, taught that a world ruler will ascend to the world stage one day. Yes. He'll be interrupted in his reign by the man of sin. Yes, the Antichrist. It'll look a lot like Hitler's takeover of Germany and then his outreach to the world. Antichrist will bring the world to the brink, and then Jesus will return. You know, it's fairly close to the Islamic view, minus the Mahdi and the Islamic prayer at the end of it all. Death and burial. In 632 A.D., Muhammad died and was buried. He was 63 years old at the time of his death. In 33 A.D., Jesus died and was buried. He was 33 years old at the time of his death. And that's all I have to say about death and burial. But in the next section, resurrection, appearances, ascension, present ministry, we've come to the end of the story. We find more things which we cannot offer a comparison to the life of Muhammad. Jesus rose from the dead. He's not in any of the tombs that have been designated as his final resting place, and they're still fighting over that. For 40 days, he appeared to witnesses who saw him resurrected, touched him, ate with him. Hundreds of people saw him after he rose from the dead. He had deep discussions with these people. He is alive. He then ascended back to his Father, and from his present location, he pours out his Spirit on those who call upon his name. He forgives their sins. He hears their prayers. He gently leads them into the perfection that he promised he would give them. Quite a difference. In fact, as I said, I have nothing to tell you about Muhammad in this regard. As to his following, the following of both of these men, there are 1.5 billion souls today who follow Muhammad. 2.1 billion souls following Jesus Christ in one measure or another. In both cases, there are many divisions, many brand names. There are lukewarm, there are cold, there are fiery hot. There are ignorant and dead. They're intelligent and alive. Those who know their religion and those who are just a statistic. So who knows which man really claims the most loyalty in today's world? Or, don't forget, all the centuries before. Technically, all the way back to those who prophesied the Christ, long before Abraham. Jesus said with no apologies or shame, that the road that leads to him is a narrow one, and few there be that find it. Few compared to all the people who have ever lived, or how few? Militants on both sides, in either sense of that word militant, make lots of news and give false impressions. Jesus questioned, when the Son of Man comes, will he even find faith on the earth? This is one category best left alone. Time and eternity will tell how many hearts have been claimed by each of these men. And 39, his will. More important than the above question of following is the question of ideal Mohammedan thinking and ideal Christian thinking. We've covered much of this in the above report, and the reader or listener must now ask, what is it really that Muhammad wanted? What is it that Jesus wanted and still wants? Was it war or peace? Was it political peace or personal peace? Was it righteousness imposed from without or from within? Was it a worldwide governmental system that he wanted? Was it hate or was it love? Was it a new leaf or a new life? In Christ, we have the option of stopping at any time and asking him what his will is. He has an uncanny way of letting us know. Unfortunately, Muhammad cannot now be accessed. My conclusion, number 40. The book of Hebrews says it best. Though the writer of that New Testament masterpiece does not compare Jesus to Muhammad, he compares him to beings that are greater than Muhammad. And that Arabian leader would certainly agree that angels are at a higher level than himself, but Jesus is exalted above the angels. Never did an angel hear, "My son," addressed to him. Jesus did. Never was worship directed by God to an angel, but the angels are to worship the Son. No angel is given an eternal throne, but the Son is. No angel was involved in creation, but the Son was. If Jesus is greater than angels, and angels, including Gabriel, are greater than Muhammad, well, the logic is inescapable. Though Islam's revelation makes Jesus just another man, like Muhammad, to whom many God things happened, the revelation of the Holy Spirit says that Jesus is God and thus better. Hebrews goes on to say that Jesus' priesthood is better than Aaron's, that his new covenant is better than the old one called the law, that his sanctuary, his own person, is better than the old tabernacle or temple, that his sacrifice is better than the animal sacrifices. He's just better. And again, I want to stress, as I did early in this report, that Jesus is the last prophet. You see, this is, in a sense, the year of the Lord. Even our calendars attest, Anno Domini, the year of the Lord. The great millennial day of the Lord will follow soon, I believe. But we're now in the days the prophets saw of Jesus coming. In their prophecies, they saw first and second coming at the same time. They wrapped it all together as one day. Isaiah 9, an example. Unto us a child is born, first coming. And the government shall be upon his shoulder, second coming. Example, Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor, first coming. And the day of vengeance of our God, second coming. Example, Micah 5, out of you, Bethlehem, shall come forth to me, first coming, the one who is to be ruler in Israel, that second coming. Example, Zechariah 9, your king is coming to you, lowly and riding on a donkey, first coming. His dominion shall be from sea to sea, that second coming. If the comings of the Lord are viewed as one big coming, with merely an age of grace in between them, or actually his coming is the age of grace, then it becomes obvious that Jesus is for all of those hundreds or thousands of years the only prophet speaking the words of God to his people and even to the world. All other voices that rise during the coming of the Lord that is now happening are mere distractions, and the sheep will not hear them. Should a concern arise in someone's heart about this or that prophet, the Spirit gave us tests that we can use to determine who is and who is not from God. Here's a few. In 1 John chapter 2, verse 19, antichrists leave the fellowship of the church. That's one way you can know an antichrist. They will eventually leave the fellowship of the church. John says, if they had been of us, they would have continued with us. Islam claims to be a confirmation of the book and its people. But in fact, Muhammad led his people away from the church. And then in that same book, chapter 2:22 and 3:23, antichrists deny Father and Son. I'm talking about antichrist plural here. We know there is one antichrist that is coming later, but generally speaking, antichrists, John was talking about. He is antichrist, he said, who denies the Father and the Son. This is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ. You see, Islam believes in Jesus, but not that he is the Son. They believe in God, but not that he is a Father. They therefore deny the Father and the Son. And in that same book, 3:16, denial of the sacrifice of Jesus. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us. Islam denies, though, that it was Jesus on that cross laying down his life for us. I do not wish to insult or disparage or judge, but the truth is that Jesus Christ is the only way to salvation. Muhammad cannot save. His way is the way of worldly conquest, worldly salvation, if you please. It works for a while, but it ultimately fails. All the kingdoms of this world have come down, including what looked like Christianity in the Roman Catholic system. Only Jesus' kingdom will prevail. And it will prevail because Jesus will see to it that it does when he returns. For now, his people plod on, pulling souls out of the fire here and there, bringing the salvation of God to as many as possible, waiting for Jesus revealing, and with him, the revealing of all of the sons of God, who will transform this planet into a totally livable and enjoyable place again. For, and once more, we have no comparison for Muhammad. Jesus is the Eternal One. He lived in eternity past, he lives in eternity present and future. He's one with the Father, just as he said. Today he's speaking to as many as will hear, among Muslims and Jews, those calling themselves Christians even, but who don't know him. He's calling for people to come out, to be separate, to be filled with him, to wait for his appearing. Do you hear his voice? Are you one of his? Thank you for staying with me through this series, and be sure to check out other items, other series, actually, that we have on Sermon Audio, especially the Christian's Guide to the Quran you might want to check out, and a whole bunch of other things that I won't go into now, but I do hope to talk with you again soon. The Lord bless you real good. Bye-bye.